funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How does satire TV shape American culture and inform American viewpoints? From self-described fake news shows like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report to animated shows like South Park and The Simpsons, viewers with basic cable and an appetite for irony can find a variety of nightly choices. Some observers worry that airing our most serious political and social issues as entertainment contributes to a culture of automatic and incurable cynicism, or worse yet, allows viewers to get all their news from programs designed primarily to amuse rather than inform. But my guest today believes broadcast satire has a real and important role to play in serious political and social discourse, and points to the fact that it has grown over the past decade or so into a genre of television in its own right. Jeffrey P. Jones is Associate Professor of Communication and Theater Arts at Old Dominion University. Along with Jonathan Gray and Ethan Thompson, he is the editor of a new book of essays called Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. Jeffrey, welcome to Think.
Great to be with you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with this idea that satire TV is, in fact, its own genre now, as opposed to just an occasional feature on television. Will you talk about that evolution?
Sure. We have to understand that American television for so many years really did not feature satire. In the network era, it was very much an era of, least objectionable programming, as large of audience as one could obtain. And as such, satire, is, as we'll talk about, I hope, is a little too dangerous for that. And while we can point to the Smothers Brothers or Laugh-In or maybe even Saturday Night Live in the 70s, network television really didn't deal with satire very well, as opposed to, say, Great Britain. Well, in the 1990s, what we call this post-network era, with the fragmentation that arrives with cable, now all of a sudden you're not looking for mass audiences. You're looking for a narrower demographic. And so a channel such as Comedy Central, which is born in like 1992, 1993, it can provide programs that attract small audiences, so say a million viewers, and still make a profit. And so what we've seen since the 90s to the present time is just that. Comedy Central, six of the programs we cover in this book are Comedy Central shows. But you also, as you said, you have The Simpsons and others that have become popular as well. So we've made the argument that given this change in the economics, as well as some other changes, what you have is this new blossoming of the genre. And then that's obviously the economic argument. The political is satire is also very much about a political context, and it really has taken flight during the Bush administration.
What I think is so fascinating about this fragmentation and this post-network era, Jeffrey, is the fact that even members of the same audience for two different shows might accept politically incorrect humor and certain kinds of discussions on a show they know to be satire that they wouldn't stand for in a traditional venue like a sitcom.
You know, sitcoms are very much formulaic. We've grown up with sitcoms since, really in radio, but the 1950s with the blossoming of television. Sitcoms are a very, really, if you think about it, a rigid genre. They repeat the same underlying joke over and over again in different situations. They repeat a lot of the same stereotypes. And so what I would say is we become very familiar with the sitcom and what it is allowed to do and not allowed to do, if you will. We maintain the what's acceptable and not. And you're right, some people then may not accept that in a sitcom but accept it elsewhere. But then again, we don't really know that. We don't really know a lot about the viewing culture, who watches these shows exactly. You know, for instance, a lot of people think that the Daily Show's predominant population is 18 to 24-year-olds. Well, that's not true. The largest demographic watching are 25 to 49-year-olds, which is why you see so many serious authors on those shows. So anyway, back to the point is, we don't really know whether audiences, what they're offended at or not offended about, and what they watch and don't watch. What we do know is that satire being on cable predominantly, is they can have an audience, the Daily Show, about 2.6 million people, and be a highly profitable show for that network.
Now, critics of satire TV, and especially of programs like The Daily Show, will argue that too many young Americans, and you mentioned that sort of incorrect understanding of who's actually watching, but they worry that Americans are getting all their news by watching it. Are they, in fact, those viewers significantly less informed than the average American?
Well, this is kind of a sore point with me. Several years ago, I wrote about this in a different book called Entertaining Politics, and that statistic first arose in 2004 from a survey that was conducted and then repeated in 2008. It's conducted in December of the election cycle, presidential, and they ask, "Are you getting information about your political campaign from these shows?" And people say, yeah. Well, it's not surprising that before the first primary is ever held, if you're going to watch a show like this, they're going to be talking about politics. And so I have repeatedly challenged this notion that this is where people get their news. You know, even Maureen Dowd said in one of her articles, and she works for the New York Times, "I get information from these shows that I haven't seen elsewhere, and I read four papers a day." And I would say the same thing. So I think this claim is somewhat of a moral panic. We see young people not reading newspapers, not watching television news, not sure that they're connected to public life in the ways that make us feel comfortable. And therefore, we want to say, oh, Lord, what happens if they get their information from these shows? And that's all kinds of assumptions, that these shows don't have information, that they don't provide something meaningful. And our book challenges that. And another, you know, the second edition of my Entertaining Politics book is coming out, where I literally show comparisons with a regular newscast and show how The Daily Show is as informative, if not more so.
It pretty much hits all the same stories.
It very much so, at mm-hmm. least in the comparisons that I've made. It will, but let's not fool ourselves. I mean, why should we think that any one place gives us all our news? What we do know about media consumers is that they're like at a buffet. We consume news from all sources: magazines, in passing, billboards, televisions, on in a bar. You get information. So people are constantly absorbing information and getting news. Again, I think this is just somewhat of a panic, that what we're really trying to do in these statements, I think, is chastise young people because of their movement away from these traditional forms. Though there's a lot of us in the academy or professors who think that that's the wrong reading here.
Well, it would seem logical to me, Jeffrey, that political satire wouldn't appeal to people who didn't have an interest in being informed about politics.
Exactly. Well, there have been some quantitative studies that have shown, let's measure, let's ask six questions, and how well do you know about current affairs? And guess what? The Daily Show viewers actually came out higher than people who watch broadcast television or even read a newspaper. So, yeah, I mean, generally, and Jon Stewart says this in his interviews, to get what we're doing, you have to have some kind of knowledge of what's going on in the world. So when he talks about, you know, former Assistant Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, you need to know who this person is for it to be funny. And so there's a level at which you do have to be at least cognizant of the rhythms of what's happening in public life to understand the joke.
On the other hand, Stewart and some of his writers and producers have very openly said, given the nature of what they do, they don't share any of the same ethical obligations that, quote unquote, real journalists have. Is that a cop out, do you think?
A cop out? Why would you, if I could push back, what do you mean a cop out? I mean, are they letting themselves off the hook? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, if they're going to have these people on here, and they do have a great deal of influence on the way people think, do you think it's fair to say we can talk about all these things and people will get information from us and it's good information, but we are not obligated to look at things with any kind of journalistic sense?
In journalistic sense, you mean objectivity and fairness, I would assume.
Not just objectivity, but also completeness of information.
I see. Well, you know, this is a 22-minute show And what they do is they say, we are one of many conversations occurring in society. You want the ranters, you can look at Bill O'Reilly, you can look at Keith Olbermann. You want a different take, that's what we provide. I think the mistake is to think that all that they provide is just ha-ha funny or cynical or something that is not meaningful to democracy. When you watch Jon Stewart, he's very much interrogating the news, but from a different perspective. One of the key techniques that they do is what we call redaction. That is, he takes existing video and he splices it together in new and creative ways, and we see reality differently. I think really the onus is on news to do a better job of mining their archives, mining the evidence that they have in the public record and their files to show the duplicity or the lying or the mendacity of some of our policymakers, which is exactly what Stewart does. So I don't know if we want to apply the kind of existing standards of journalism to Jon Stewart, because what Jon Stewart is doing most of the time is critiquing those kind of shifting standards of journalism, which have tended more toward either being compliant with those in power or being about spectacle.
Jeffrey P. Jones is my guest. He's Associate Professor of Communication and Theater Arts at Old Dominion University. His new book is called Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. We'll return to our conversation with Jeffrey in just a moment and welcome you to get on the line now to join us at 1-800-933-5372. Another Jeffrey has just entered the studio, Jeff Whittington, who is Senior Producer of Think and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And we are hopefully going to get an update on how we're doing in our spring membership campaign, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. We have actually made some wonderful progress this morning thanks to many, many people who have joined the station, who have renewed, who have made additional gifts. You can join them at 800-456-5372. You can contribute online, of course, at kera.org. Our goal is not just your participation in this public radio station, your contribution, but it's also to wrap this drive up as soon as possible. We're halfway through the second week, and you know what? We've done really well thanks to you. There's a $227,000 left to raise, and when we raise the last dollar, it's over. So call now, 800-456-5372, or pledge online at kera.org.
We are very excited to have Jeffrey P. Jones here talking about this book, Satire TV. He has written some of the pieces in it. There are essays by a variety of different commentators. It is really a fascinating look at politics and comedy in what they call the post-network era. This is the kind of discussion that we're really proud to be able to bring you on public radio. This is not a little tiny soundbite snippet of something. This is an examination, as the book itself is, of something that has real impact in our society. Public radio is the kind of place where you can get this discussion, where you can hear from people who really know what they are talking about, and also participate yourself. We believe that's worth something. And if you can make a contribution right now, if you can find it in your heart to pay for something you're using anyway, the number to call is 1-800-456-5372.
We can say thanks when you join at the $120 level with a copy of the book, Satire TV. It's $10 a month when you join as a sustaining member. We have heard from Mr. Tarcisio Morales in Parker, Drew Hunter in Flower Mound, and Marla McDonald in Dallas. Marla made an additional gift. Thanks so much, Marla. We'd love to thank you, but you have to call 800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org to get involved.
Thanks also to Hao Che in Richardson and Elizabeth Conley in Denton, Rob Green in North Richland Hills, and Mr. and Mrs. Ian Wadsworth in Dallas. All of them have called 1-800-456-5372, made a contribution of whatever they chose to give, and helped to wrap up the spring membership campaign. Let yourself be next. Please call 1-800-456-5372 or go online and make a contribution at kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Right off the top, we're going to get to today's big breaking story. We do have big news here on Capitol Hill. Senator Arlen Specter, now a Republican from Pennsylvania, has announced that he is going to switch parties. He is going to become a Democrat.
Wow, you know what this means? Sodomy party! Sodomy party, sodomy party, sodomy party. Worst Frankie Avalon movie ever. But this really is big because Specter's move puts the Democrats within a hair's breadth of an unfilibusterable 60-seat Senate majority. So now it appears the Senate's balance of power, in many respects, the very future of our nation, is in the hands of Al Franken. What a country! In Russia! What I especially loved about Specter's decision was the press conference he gave with the reason.
The prospects for winning a Republican primary are bleak. I am not prepared to have my 29-year record in the United States Senate decided by the Pennsylvania Republican primary electorate.
I mean, sure, they elected me 5 times, but I just realized those are crazy. Wouldn't trust them with a dull pair of scissors.
That is a clip from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, which aired last night on Comedy Central. My guest this hour is Jeffrey P. Jones, whose new book is called Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. I wonder, Jeffrey, the extent to which you think that the criticism of shows like The Daily Show is coming loudest and longest from members of the old guard media.
I do. But you know, I don't know. I read Frank Rich and I read Maureen Dowd, and there are plenty of Christopher Hitchens. There's plenty of Andrew Sullivan, plenty of people who find it an important voice for a different type of discussion about politics, about the media, about democracy. I do think that there is a level of the old guard who are concerned that you know, new sources of information like this, especially one that pretty regularly attacks the mainstream media for not doing a very good job.
Absolutely.
That this is becoming a site, somewhat of a challenge to them. And I do think the critics, there are others, though, in the Academy who proclaim these types of shows as cynical and that by laughing that somehow we're dismissing the importance of politics, but I think that's really the wrong reading.
Yeah, let's talk about the cynicism angle. Do you think that these shows breed cynicism, or do they appeal to people who might have a cynical outlook to begin with?
Let's go back a step.
Okay.
Satire, the definition of satire generally amongst theorists, and of course satire goes back to the ancient Greeks, it's comprised of four things. It's comprised of verbal aggression that passes judgment in some sense, and then the other two components are its kind of playful nature and the laughter it hopefully engages in. So when I think about satire, is it a cynical form of communication? The answer is no, and the reason is while it's verbally aggressive and is a verbal attack, it in some way is passing judgment. It is holding something up for ridicule that has breached the implied norms of society, and it's doing so, this damning indictment, in a socially accepted way, and that is playful. But it really is kind of a moral rebuke. And if you say, look at what satire did toward the Bush administration, it was just that. You could have angry polemics, a Keith Olbermann, or you could have someone saying, you know, this is not the way the world is, and they do it through humor. And laughter is that kind of communal moral rebuke. So actually, for me, what satirists always do is they're actually interested in positive change, but through a form of kind of playful negativity. But I think it's easy when you see the laughter or the holding people up to a verbal attack that what you're doing is just feeding into the viewer or listener's worst instincts of, yeah, all politicians are bad. I think people watch the show because they actually care about politics, not because if they didn't care, they'd be watching David Letterman or Jay Leno. But instead, if they do care about politics, this is a place they can come.
We had Larry Wilmore on the show a couple of months ago, who is the show's senior black correspondent, and has done some really, I think, amazing work exploring the way we look at race in America today.
Sure.
And one thing that's very fascinating about his approach is that he almost deliberately says sort of exactly the opposite of what you think he's about to say.
Right.
Can you talk about that element of surprise?
Well, I'm not a comedian, but... I do think that's where comedy really gets you. It's that pop moment. Comedians do talk about there's kind of a pop. And what they mean is you're going to say something commonsensical that everybody thinks, but they're doing it in a way that you're not expecting. Or it can be shocking. You're not going expecting him to be as blunt about race as he's going to be. And there's somewhat of a, it takes your breath away. It's not cringeful. That's a different type of comedy. But there is that pop where the audience is like, ah. And Chris Rock is a master at it. And Larry Wilmore on that show does a very good job of that, too. So I think that's somewhat how comedy works. But there's still this kind of, if you listen to Chris Rock, there's this communal center to it all. What they're really telling you are common sense points of view that we've either forgotten or that we're going to use that to laugh at something.
Well, and it forces you to ask yourself why no one else is saying it out loud.
Exactly, exactly, very much. And the careers of Chris Rock is an example. Early Dennis Miller was the same way, his show for 9 years on HBO. Bill Maher, his career, too, crafted on, I'm going to say we exist in a politically incorrect climate, but I'm going to say the things that we're all thinking, but nobody has the guts to say. So you're very right.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Plano and speak with Falil. Hi, Falil.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Hi, Chris. My question was a little off the topic, but do you or Jerry think that Rush Limbaugh is adding to any of his journalistic values to the show, or is he dissecting the same way as Bill Maher is dissecting? Even though he's more appear to be more sarcastic than being satirist, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks for calling. Where does Limbaugh fit into all this?
Limbaugh has always called himself an entertainer when he began in the late 1980s and early 90s, and there are plenty of listeners who find what he does humorous and funny. I did a long time ago in graduate school audience studies, and they're very serious that what he does is humorous. I don't think it fits part of the definition of satire. One of the other things associated with that verbal attack, though, is on power. And often the targets of Limbaugh's attacks are the not powerful. So environmentalists or gays and lesbians or the American Civil Liberties Union, those aren't exactly people with a lot of power in society, and yet he holds them up for ridicule. You know, at what point maybe satire is also in the mind of who's hearing it, but I don't particularly see that satirical as much as I see it kind of bigoted and mean-spirited often.
Is there actually any really good and effective conservative-based satire in this country right now?
You know, I don't think so. Some people in the past have pointed to P.J. O'Rourke as a writer. I think what was interesting that we saw in the last couple of years is that Fox News tried a conservative satire program called the Half Hour News Hour, in which it, in essence, tried to ape The Daily Show. But again, I think it fell into the same trap. I mean, its targets were atheists and Cindy Sheehan and gays and lesbians, and it just didn't come off funny. Then again, it also had a laugh track, and it was a poorly written show. But it was an example of the right trying to do this type of stuff. But again, I think it falls flat when you're not attacking people in power. And the Democrats really weren't in power at the time. Maybe now that Democrats are, it might be more effective, but maybe not.
We have an email here from Tom who asks if you'd talk about what he calls the greatest satire show on network TV. Network TV. That was the week that was.
Yeah, in the 1960s, ABC, it didn't last very long. It was a British import. It in some ways was a combination of like the Daily Show and a variety show. I haven't seen much of the show, but the fake news genre has been around a while. Ultimately, we claim in the introduction to this book that the failure, and we don't do an in-depth study, don't get me wrong, of what's called TW3, that was the week that was, but that it it really didn't push the boundaries, push back very hard. Again, probably because it was as much a part of the network era and not wanting to offend the powerful. And unlike Britain, where the show was born, we do not have the same kind of satirical tradition. But again, I want to reiterate, one theorist said, satire is about a time and a place and a people. And I think there's a reason we saw a different type of humor in the 1990s than we see today. In the 90s, you have Bill Maher and Dennis Miller. They're doing sex jokes. They're doing Clinton and the foibles associated with that administration. But when push came to shove after 9/11 and the Bush administration took some really extraordinary steps, satire has come into being, or really, I should say, found its footing as a form of communication that really can attack power in a way that journalists can't. And so, hence, the time and the place, satire is a form of communication that fits these times.
Jeffrey P. Jones is my guest. He's Associate Professor of Communication and Theater Arts at Old Dominion University. We're talking about the book that he edited, Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. We'll be back to our discussion in just a moment. If you would like to have a copy of Satire TV, you can call right now to 1-800-456-5372. Make a contribution at the $120 level, and this will be your thank you gift. You can also choose a variety of other thank you gifts if something else appeals to you. We are appealing to you for a contribution, though, because this is the reason that public radio exists. The reason that we're here right now broadcasting to you is because other people along the way have seen fit to pay money of their own to keep this station strong. 56% of our funding comes from people just like you who listen several times a week and value public radio. Jeff Whittington is with us now, senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And this is no joke. KERA 90.1 will bring you NPR's live anchored coverage of President Barack Obama's press conference tonight. That starts at 7 p.m. Central Time. You can join NPR's Robert Siegel with senior Washington editor Ron Elving and White House correspondent Don Gagne as the president marks his first 100 days in office. This NPR special coverage will get underway tonight at 7 p.m. here on KERA 90.1 and, of course, online at KERA.org. And you know what? Even though we're in the midst of our fundraising campaign, we're still going to bring you all the coverage that you need about what's going on in the world, what's going on in the United States regionally and here locally in North Texas. What's that worth to you? Is it worth $5 or $10 a month? Then call 800-456-5372. Go online to KERA.org. Chris, we can actually end this membership campaign this week. We have about $227,000 left to raise. We know we can do that in about 2.5 days, but only if you call 800-456-KERA.
Public radio is not just called public radio because it's for everyone. It's also created by everyone. The idea, honestly, the idea behind public radio is that everyone who listens will give just a little bit of money to make it possible. Now, in practice, we know that's not the case. We know that there is a vast, sadly, majority of people who listen and somehow don't see fit to send even a few dollars a month in. And you know, you may have financial reasons that make it impossible for you to do $5 or $10 a month, but I think the vast majority of you are just haven't somehow been convinced that it's worth it. And we would ask you to participate in this way in keeping this station strong and healthy. We are programmed locally. We are owned by the community. We are not some big faraway place. We are based here and we serve you. And we come to you as directly as we possibly can to explain how we make our money so that we don't have to have a bunch of commercials that would dictate the kind of content that we have. Much like, we were talking about the post-network era, the splintering of the audience makes it possible for a television show with a smaller audience to be successful. Public radio is sort of the same. We don't have to convince an advertiser that every single person is going to be happy with everything we put on the air. We're able to get a significant audience of people who want in-depth content. You are part of that, and we would just ask that you also be part of the funding solution at 1-800-456-5372. 1-800-456-5372.
And it's not a splintered audience either. It's a rapidly growing audience that represents a very diverse group of people. You, the listeners of KERA, you, the public radio folks who live here in North Texas. If you've just found KERA recently, this is how we raise the money. And if you've been listening for a long time, if you've been considering making perhaps a little bit larger gift to KERA, you know what? That would go a long way right now. And I'm talking about the $365, the $500 contribution, maybe the $1,500 contribution or more, because we really want to wrap this campaign up in the next couple of days. We want to do it this week. And we can do that if you'll follow the lead of David Brown in Sunnyvale, Texas, who renewed his membership, Kurt and Aaron Davis in Grapevine. They gave an additional gift. Chris Bryan in Denton also gave an additional gift. And thanks also to Tanya Baker and Tyler for her additional gift. It's folks like these that keep KERA strong, keep the station on the air, and also get this membership drive over as quickly as possible so we can get back to the regular schedule.
Give us a call now before you get too busy with the rest of your day. We know that very often what happens is you think to yourself, okay, I'm going to make that call, and then you get wrapped up in something else, and then time goes by. Now's the perfect time. We're about to take a little short station break. You can be done with the call, have your membership done, or done with the online transaction by the time, about 2 minutes from now, when we get back with Jeffrey P. Jones to finish our discussion about satire TV. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go to kera.org. Everybody who makes a contribution during this drive will be signed up to win that trip for two to London on British Airways with the tour of the BBC studios and the $1,000 Marriott gift card. That alone should be worth a gift of some sort.
Someone's going to win. It could be you. Please call 800-456-5372. Please go online to kera.org. Remember, you can pick up your very own copy of the book Satire TV. When you join the station at the $120 membership level today, you can see it there at kera.org, or you can talk to someone about it when you call 800-456-5372.
Again, the number is 1-800-456-KERA, if that's easier to stick in your head while you're out somewhere. You can also go online to kera.org. You might consider joining with a sustaining membership, which makes even a $1,500 contribution pretty palatable because it comes out of your checking account monthly as $125 a month. We can set those up at just about any level that you like. So do give us a call now, 1-800-456-5372, or online at kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone here clearly has spring fever. And nation, there is another disease spreading through our country, and it has reached nearly pandemic levels. Today, sadly, it claimed another victim. Jim?
I have decided to be a candidate for re-election in 2010 in the Democratic primary.
Republican Senator Arlen Specter has contracted donkey flu. Folks, this disease is now officially out of control. Back in 2004, we thought we had it contained to the coasts and the cities, but then it mutated and tore through the country. Republicans tried to fight it off, but their white cells weren't strong enough, although they were very, very white. Now, we should have seen this coming, folks. Specter was exhibiting the classic symptoms of donkey flu. Mild fever, and being 21 points behind in Republican primary polls.
That is Stephen Colbert last night from the Colbert Report, also responding to the defection of Arlen Specter from the GOP to the Democratic Party. I think, Jeffrey, what Colbert does is really interesting because he maintains this character that is essentially a send-up of people like Bill O'Reilly who are doing this for real.
Absolutely, and he's very intentional about it. If you can read interviews, and he talks about that he's trying to bring together several things that a Bill O'Reilly does, but not just Bill O'Reilly. He also Lou Dobbs. He says he's trying to channel somewhat a little bit of Anderson Cooper in there, But there's kind of an arrogance as well as a ego as well as a stupidity. And he says those are the three things that he's trying to channel in this parody of these pundits. And it's an interesting form. We don't, you know, Jon Stewart is a fake news show. He's a fake talk show, a fake pundit show. And I think that's an important point to make, is that what we have seen with the rise of cable news channels, MSNBC, Fox, CNN, is really a move away from reporting to talk. Talk is cheap to produce, and it is what they primarily program in their viewing hours. And so when you have such popular people like the Bill O'Reillys or the Lou Dobbs, then now for someone to be critiquing this more dominant form of what cable news does, I think is an important contribution.
Jeffrey P. Jones is my guest. The book is called Satire TV. Our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Bob in Flower Mound. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Chris, and your guest. Before I begin, I totally embrace his premise that there's much to learn from comedy shows, Colbert and Stewart, totally true. If there was a moment of comedy a few minutes ago, though, quite seriously, it was the guest's assertion that the gay lobby and environmental lobby are somehow not powerful. If you've got society going where to differ with you is to instantly brand you as a bigot, that speaks to power that transcends money or station in life. Come on.
What do you think about that, Jeffrey?
I guess I would say, you know, when you have, what did Mike Huckabee say, 36 states basically voting with majorities voting against gay marriage or defending traditional marriage. You know, that was what Madison was scared of in Federalist Paper number 10, is the tyranny of the majority. And so, you know, when people, as Jon Stewart says, are having to, ask for their rights, then I don't think that suggests they hold a lot of power. If people rhetorically brand those who oppose gays and lesbians as bigots, that's a rhetorical battle unto itself, but it doesn't suggest that gays and lesbians possess power, and at least that's how I would read it.
You mentioned earlier in the hour that Great Britain has a much longer and stronger tradition of satire on TV than the U.S. I wonder if you can talk about the influence of Sacha Baron Cohen on American satire.
He's about to make another splash very soon. He fits within this genre in interesting ways. Again, he's doing the fake interviewer. It's opposing. I think it's very much political. We do call it cringe comedy, in that when you watch, it's hard to watch because it makes you feel very uncomfortable as a viewer. But he really is trying to allow people to be themselves and not monitor themselves, not censor themselves. And so by doing things that would pull out their racism or their sexism or their homophobia, he creates a character that almost invites those internal things that we socially repress and invites them out. And it's very much a critique of American society. If you saw his movie, you know, you understood why he traveled from Virginia down through Alabama and Louisiana. And I say that as an Alabamian. He intentionally was trying to make a political point of view. And so he's been an interesting contribution. I hope he goes more back to TV. It seems that movies is his current mode of operation at the moment. But the Ali G Show was a great program.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Ian in Dallas. Hey, Ian.
Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Great, thanks.
All right. I just wanted to point out one of the things I thought was interesting between your guest kind of touched on this earlier regarding liberal and conservative satire was that I think with most conservative satire, the way they tend to poke fun at people and the way they approach their humor is really mean-spirited, and it focuses more on the individuals rather than the ideas. You know, sometimes you'll see, conservative cartoons making fun of global warming, and that's fine, but then you'll get some that, you know, they make fun of gay marriage. They're making fun of people, and it pokes fun at these people who as your guest mentioned earlier, aren't really in a position to defend themselves. And when I think of the two big differences between conservative and liberal satire, that's kind of what I picture in my head.
Can I play off that? I think that I wanted to talk a little about Saturday Night Live while we still had time. And
sure.
I think your guest is on to an interesting point. Saturday Night Live comes under pretty withering attack in our book, and it's a chapter I penned. Most people think that Saturday Night Live, especially in election season, is cutting-edge political satire. And while we had an amazing election this time, and we could talk specifically about it, the vast history of Saturday Night Live is one in which they really are focused on the personal characteristics of a politician. So think Dana Carvey, and Dana Carvey's great contribution was making fun of how George Herbert Walker Bush talked, or the funny things he said. But it rarely attacked the people in power, or when Daryl Hammond did Bill Clinton, it was his sexual appetite or his appetite for McDonald's hamburgers and french fries, not their policies and not how they executed the office. And I think that there's a tendency where we do like to laugh at people, whereas I think satire really wants to get at the power. What are people doing in these positions of power? And that is a repeated point Jon Stewart makes in his comedy over and over and over again. Otherwise, it's just kind of cheap shots.
Do you get the sense that political figures of all stripes are starting to learn how to use satire TV to promote themselves or their agendas?
Well, they would be dumb if they didn't. Politics is about selling, and these are popular formats. They're getting a lot more play in these forums than they are in the news. So let's look, for instance, at John McCain's appearance on David Letterman. I don't know if you remember, in 2008, he canceled a Letterman appearance so that he could go on CBS News with Katie Couric and announce that he was temporarily suspending his campaign. Well, that was a huge mistake. Now, I would not call Letterman satire per se, but it is an entertainment talk show. And what McCain found out is that while a few million more viewers may have been watching Katie Couric, Letterman, night after night after night after night, for 2 weeks straight, bludgeoned the guy, and it was a PR nightmare for John McCain until he had to go back on and offer mea culpa. So these shows, I guess my point would be, these shows carry a cultural weight, and it's a different weight than news, but it's still important. And so politicians and their aides are learning how to go on these shows, that they need to go on these shows, and have the type of conversation that goes on there.
Jeffrey P. Jones is Associate Professor of Communication and Theater Arts at Old Dominion University. He is an editor of the new book of essays called Satire TV, Politics and Comedy in the Post-Network Era. Jeffrey, very interesting stuff. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great being there.
Thanks to all of you who have been calling throughout the hour and who are calling now. You have a few minutes before our next hour of Think Begins. What better time to pick up the phone, become a member of the station, and know that you will have interesting conversations Monday through Thursday for 2 hours for a whole nother year. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number.
Hey, Chris.
Jeff.
We would love to hear from you right now at kera.org or on the phone, 800-456-5372. Don't forget that tonight, KERA will bring you NPR's live anchored coverage of President Barack Obama's press conference at 7 p.m. The coverage is going to start with NPR's Robert Siegel, senior Washington editor Ron Elving, and White House correspondent Don Gagne. As the president marks his 100th day in office today, NPR's special coverage will start at 7 p.m. here on KERA 90.1. Of course, you can listen also online at kera.org. And while you're there, click on the support banner at the top of the page. It'll take you to the support page, and you can fill out the pledge form yourself and decide, make that decision. Finally, come on, make the decision to join the station as a supporting listener.
We already know that public radio is something that you want in your life because you make the effort to tune to the station and to listen to it. A lot of you listen all throughout the day. Sometimes people will be in the car, and this is the one thing that they listen to. If you've made that decision to listen, please make the decision to become a supporter of public radio. We would have to come to you. Right now, we come to you three times a year and do these fundraising campaigns. And we like having knocked the fourth drive out. Thanks to your support, we've been able to do that. We would probably only have to come to you once a year if everybody who listens would make a modest contribution. Now, for some of you, modest might be $1,500 or $5,000. For others, modest might be $5 a month. We understand that your budget is different, and we're not about to tell you what's right for you. But we ask that you engage with us, not just with your mind and with your attention, but also with your wallet, because that is what allows us to continue bringing you programming on KERA that you won't hear anywhere else on the broadcast dial in North Texas. Our telephone number is 1-800-456-5372. You can also make a contribution online at kera.org.
And when you call, when you go online, you'll be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Online at kera.org. Also, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and good old K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman. Wherever you listen, you know, it's KERA. It's your public radio resource. It's up to you to support it. We have about $226,600 left to raise. You know, we can probably get below $200,000 left to go today. And those of you who are waiting for the last push and the last day and a half or so, just we're going to get there, and then you'll call. But those of you who want to set the example and spur those folks on and get us there, help pull the trigger on this drive. Call us, 800-456-5372. Go online and pledge at kera.org.
And I know that there are a significant number of you, technology changes all the time, who have been Twittering that you've made your contribution or have put it up on your Facebook page or on your blog. We greatly appreciate that because maybe more than the influence we have to get your closest friends who also love the station to make a contribution, you have the power to do that. And your great example really matters. And as Jeff said, there are some people who like to wait until the very last minute. We can get closer and closer to the very last minute and the very last dollar we need to raise if you give us a call right now at 1-800-456-5372.
I haven't looked or seen yet any YouTube KERA pledge pitch production pieces.
Parodies that, or
yeah, that audience
satire
members have made. But if you are making those, then share them with us because you never know.
We'd love those.
I'd really love to see or hear that stuff.
Even if we couldn't put it on the air.
But I'd really like to thank Don Lindsay in Denton for renewing his membership. Ramak is Hawk and Cherry in Richardson, who's a new member.
Welcome.
Thank you so much, Rama. We'd love to be able to thank you, but we can only do that if you call 800-456-5372. If you enjoyed Jeffrey P. Jones from Old Dominion University, you can pick up a copy of his book, Satire TV. It's the subtitle is Politics and Comedy in a Post Network in the Post Network Era. It's available when you join the station at the $120 membership level. Of course, the book is published by NYU Press. It's available at book retailers online and in stores as well. But we'd love to be able to thank you by sending that to you if that's something you're interested in, or just join at the $120 or $240 level and you can make your entire contribution go directly to support the programming. We do need to raise about $226,000 still to get to the final dollars of this drive. So we're waiting to hear from you.
You can figure out for yourself what you spend on all kinds of other information. And you've heard us in drives in the past talking about how much you spend on coffee or how much you spend on cable. You know, I think everybody's got that point at this stage. There are some of you who are just going to sit there and sort of hold out. Like you might be almost spurred to pick up the phone and then you think, no, I have to stop. We all have to train ourselves because we're so used to getting these sales pitches for things that we know we don't need. Public radio, relax. You do need it. You know you need it because you use it every day. It's fine. You're already using this service, and it's a not-for-profit. There's not some big corporation bankrolling the station if you don't come to it. We require the individuals who listen, and that's one of the things that we know makes public radio unique, the fact that it is built on the contributions of people just like you who listen. That allows you to be our boss as opposed to some giant person who wants to put a commercial on and sell you something else. That's not our intention. We're proud of that. But the only way for the formula to work is if people who listen pay the bills for us. 1-800-456-5372 is the telephone number.
You know, this morning, Chris, I was on the air during Morning Edition with the station's executive vice president and chief financial officer, Jason Daisy.
I heard that. You guys sounded great.
Thank you very much. He sounded really good, I thought. And you know what? He made some really great points about the funding model and that 10%, only 10%. I mean, the CFO, folks, said it live on the air. Only 10% of the revenue that KERA needs to survive and function every year, only 10% comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's otherwise known as the federal government in public broadcasting. 56% comes from you. Your contributions make up over half the budget of this station. That's why it's so crucial that you call right now, 800-456-5372, or pledge online at KERA.org.
This is a not-for-profit organization that serves you. This is not just doing something for others, although it does serve the entire community. It is also something that you rely on every day. Please help us to rely on you. Let us be able to count on your support. 1-800-456-5372 or KERA.org. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.